You weren't born here, but you have been here pretty much all your life.
Correct.
You and your family are almost the definition of a townie.
Oh, yeah, considering my grandfather goes back to 1891, I think is when my great-great-grandfather moved here, Dr. Eugene Covington. He was the only black physician in Bloomington Normal at the time. If I remember right from the family history, he started the Republican Party, something with the Republican Party and voter registration for African Americans here. He had a clinic. His office was actually on 310 North Main Street in downtown Bloomington. He lived over on East Market Street, just a few blocks from there. His original wife passed, and he married one of the Thomases. So that's how we became relations with the Buzz Thomas and that side of the family from here in town. He was not allowed to practice at the hospital, Mennonite, at the time. Graduated from Howard University's med school in D.C. His parents were slaves. He was born right after the end of the Civil War. He had attended Catholic schools in, I believe it was Philadelphia, because he had such a high intelligence level.
Was that unusual back then for a black man to be in the Catholic schools?
Yes. It's almost unusual still today.
Well, yeah. So you hinted at when he was a surgeon that he couldn't perform surgery
without having a white attending physician standing over his shoulder. So that's kind of one of the weird things where the white attending physician sometimes wasn't even a surgeon. It just had to be a white physician who was checking over his shoulder for something he didn't even know about.
Do those stories get passed down, the family?
Yes. Also, Carabel Washington did a family history because my great-great-grandfather actually delivered her. In the McLean County Historical Society, there was a section for Dr. Covington.
Was he also an obstetrician?
Yep, he delivered pretty much most of the black community. I mean, there was a thing in there that I remember reading where it was said that there were some white physicians who were trying to undercut him as far as price to run him out of business. And he complained to the medical board here in town. And
what years are we talking now? Was he practicing?
I want to say he passed in 31, so it would have been from 1896 to, I want to say, 1931. Because I know on the cornerstone of the AME Church on Center Street by Holy Trinity, I want to say that was built in 1908, and his name's on the cornerstone of that building.
So he's one of the founders of the AME Church in town?
Correct.
It's a storied history.
Yep, that's my dad's side of the family.
What else you got for history in the family here in Bloomington Normal?
My grandfather was the first black police officer in Bloomington, Doc Covington.
What year was this, roughly, or what years were these?
He passed in 57, and I want to say he started with the force in 32.
A lot of firsts in your family.
Yeah, and then I kind of slid the bar down a little bit.
Well, let's talk about you a little bit, Kevin.
All right.
Why did you want to talk to us?
We've got a lot of unrest going on in this country right now, and it seems to me like a lot of people are following in political footsteps and doing a lot of deflecting of real issues. Why is it that we can't all be equal in the country that we all built? I mean, some of us have died in every war as far as people of color. We've sacrificed. There's no reason that we shouldn't be able to find some common ground and admit what's been historically wrong with our country, which is equality.
Why is that?
What I'm finding is a lot of my friends, white friends, throughout my lifetime have become complacent. Oh, you know, we have the one. We have a few of our friends who are black, and they're not willing to look outside of even McLean County. I mean, we're pretty insulated here in McLean County. Yes, we have some issues, but compared to other places, we don't, as far as the deep-rooted problems. And so people don't want to get out of their comfort zone. They don't want to get out of the bubble. It's going to require pain on everyone's part. It's not just people of color who need to proclaim and march and peaceful in what they do, but they also be willing to compromise in some things. I mean, we're not going to get freedom and equality overnight. We haven't done it in 400 years. We haven't even done it since the civil rights. I mean, it's something that's going to take time, but you have to go into it with an open mind.
I want to switch gears on you. You talked about your family's history in the Catholic Church. You mentioned to me when we initially talked that you went to Catholic school here in town. Could you talk about going to Catholic school and probably being one of the only, if not few, black people in that school?
Yeah, pretty much at Epiphany, I was the only black child, and there was a lot of the N-word used to the point where we talked with Father King at the time, who was the head priest, and it took some persuasion to finally get him to even speak up a little bit. I thought, you know, Epiphany wasn't the place, so we went and tried St. Clair. Pretty much the same issue happened there at St. Clair, but the difference was Father Dietzen put his foot down after a while and said, you know, enough is enough. When I got over to Holy Trinity, it was a lot different. I didn't hear that word nearly as much, but I still heard it, still felt it. You don't have to hear the word. You can just tell by the way people act and their body mannerisms. I mean, the one thing that people of color, I think, have kind of become accustomed to is reading people in some regards as to race relations, because in 72 through about 78, if you walk down the street, someone would call you the N-word, here in town even. I want to say it's like almost like it became closeted when affirmative action kicked in and all that, and people of color started getting a little more clout politically here in town. It became closeted, but you still knew it was there. I mean, there are some prominent business owners who refused to have anything to do with people of color as far as in their family, but yet their businesses were in the black community.
When you talked about the N-word being dropped in your Catholic schools, was that just the students you're talking about?
Yeah, I've never heard a nun or a teacher say that. Yeah, I can't say I ever heard those words come out of... But when something happened, was the blame quickly put on me rather than others? Yes. I mean, like if an incident happened on the playground, Kevin, why'd you do that? Did you not hear them say that word? I mean, after a while, it got to the point where I was kind of physical about it. I mean, I fought a lot as a third and fourth grader, more than I should have.
What do you mean you were supposed to do something about it?
Well, you would think that if the nun's out on the playground and they hear it, they would walk over and stop it. Not doing that, and eventually it got to the point where, you know, I put up the right hand and turned the cheek for too long, and then finally said, enough's enough. If you want to call me that, I'm going to take it out on you. I'm going to exact my pound of flesh, which was not the way to go. You know, but as a child, you kind of have to learn your ways through things, and anger was something I had issues with at one point in time because of that.
Do you think you would have had anger issues otherwise?
No, because I, you know, growing up biracial, which I don't think I have mentioned yet, have a black side of family and a white side of family. I've always had to learn to walk a line between both cultures, because black culture and black society is completely different in a lot of ways than white culture and white society. So I've learned to navigate in between, which means you do a lot of accepting, a lot of taking things and saying, hey, you know, it can be better.
Let me point blank ask you that. That's an interesting thought, that you have to navigate between these two cultures because you are those two cultures, as opposed to if you're considered black or you're considered white, you don't have to navigate it the same way. Can right. you describe the difference and how maybe you had to navigate that?
Like in my family, on my mom's side, which is white, they are doctors, lawyers, physicians in Springfield. I mean, they are upper class. And so not only was I learning to navigate in two worlds, it was almost like three worlds, because socioeconomically, there's a lot of difference between living in the project and then going to your grandfather, who has lots of money, very powerful in Springfield because he founded the Springfield Clinic. My family's history on my mom's side, we've had congressmen, doctors, lawyers, architects, you name it. They've run the gamut on the high end of the economic spectrum. And then it's like I remember going to my grandpa's, one of their anniversaries, and I didn't have a suit jacket. And I got crammed into a suit jacket for the family photo. So I'm like busting the seams out because I'm so big trying to wear my grandpa. But, you know, who has $100 for a suit when you're living in projects? Was there even some racism in my family? Yeah. My grandma, I love her to death. But, you know, what she did with my other cousins, she did not do with me. And the only difference between my other cousins and me was the color of my skin.
What were some of those things, perhaps?
Well, like for every birthday, she'd take them to McDonald's or do something nice with them. I got a card. I mean, granted, I'd like getting a card with a check in it, but, you know, it was my grandma's way of, you know. So I even learned about closet racism on that end in my own family. And, like, on the black side, well, you know, you're almost too light for the black people. You know, you're too dark for the white people. That's kind of what I was saying as far as navigating in between is you have to make your own way.
I mean, you're not that old.
I'll be 51 this year.
Okay, still. That you, the N-word was thrown around pretty liberally when you were in public school as well as private or parochial schools.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that at first you didn't get a lot of backup from the administration.
No.
And you're out there all by yourself anyway in school. What does that do to you? How does that change how you view school? How does that change how you view what you're doing right then?
You don't spend a whole lot of time concentrating on school. You spend a whole lot of time concentrating on, can I get through this day, the next day, without slapping someone or hitting someone, being called in the principal's office. So, I mean, just that alone detracts you from the school part of it. I mean, I can't imagine how people even two generations older than me, like in their 70s, could grow up in the South. I mean, with that, I mean, I didn't catch it nearly as bad as they did. And, you know, it either makes you or it breaks you. You're either going to become stronger from it and learn to self-identify with yourself and your type and say, you know, forget it. They're not worth it. Or you're going to get angry about it. And far too often people get angry, and you know, I got lucky where I had some good mentors on both sides of my family and friends. I kind of have an extended family here in town. There's a lot of people in the black community who have taken me under their wing, like Marshall Howard. I call him my uncle. The Thomases, Buzz Thomas, Gloria Thomas, the Gastons, they took me under their wing, and you know, they were more, as what we say now, upwardly mobile blacks. They had money. They had education, you know, and that's the main thing is I found that it seems like education, to a lot of extent, plays a role in racist behavior and racist attitudes, because as you get to a university level, your horizons are kind of broadened. You stay in high school, you're kind of stuck with what you have right around you. When you get to that level, it's usually an intermingling of everybody. Doesn't matter race. I mean, you've got people from all over the world at a university. So your horizons get broadened and your attitudes change.
People are protesting. People are saying this is enough. We're seeing this. It looks like more than we've ever seen it. And it looks like it's sustaining itself somewhat. Even here in Bloomington Normal, what still needs to get better?
Our policing and our judicial system. Plain and simple. If those things got better, I think a lot of people of color wouldn't be so on edge. I mean, for me, I'm past this point, but between the age of 16 and 25, I had 116 traffic stops. I'm not a bad driver. The wrecks that I was involved in were not mine. I never hit anyone. They hit me. But I was definitely on that list of things where they said profiling. I was driving while black. I had nice cars. I had nice motorcycles. I had loud music.
What would you get pulled over for?
Oh, you ran this stop sign. The officer's three blocks away from me. There's a big pile of rubble sitting in front of the stop line, but he saw it. I had made the mistake when I was 16. I had a motorcycle, and I rode my motorcycle before I got my license. You know, I admit to my mistake. I got stopped. I got a ticket for it. The next day, I went down and got my motorcycle license because, you know. So, I had one cop, and this was when I was at U-High, who, for almost 2 or 3 months straight, every day I came out of U-High, he was sitting, because I lived on Hunt Drive, and I would take Fort Jesse or and Willow home. He'd be sitting over around School Street or Normal Avenue, and he stopped me. This was like 3 months in almost straight, every day I coming out of school. I was like, haven't you figured out by now I got a license?
What was he stopping you for?
You didn't come to a complete stop. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. I wouldn't get a ticket, but he'd stop me. There are other times where I'd get pulled over. I wouldn't be issued a ticket, but how do you have this car, Mr. Graham? It's called hard work. Little did they know that from the time I was 11 until I was 16, I was waxing cars for my mom every day because we had a business called Mary's Pretty Cars. And I spent my summer waxing cars when everyone else was out playing, making money.
Let me make it clear. They asked you
how you have this car. You got to remember something. Our judicial system gave them the right to do that because they thought that by stopping people and having a quota system for police officers, you'd deter crime. What are you really deterring? I mean, most criminals aren't going to be crazy enough to be driving 90 miles an hour down the street. Most criminals aren't black by the percentage of population. Remember, African Americans only make up 13.7% of our country, but yet we're 66% almost of the incarcerated population. So why is there such a disparaging number between that? It's because they spend all their time policing in the black community, not the white community. I mean, if you go sit down on the west side of town, I'd be willing to bet you'd see 12 or 13 squad cars go by. If you went and sat out on the east side of town, like on Airport Road, how many squad cars do you think would you'd see drive by you? Zero, maybe one, two, unless they were called out there. So if you spend all your time in one area, yes, you're going to find crime.
So what you were talking about getting pulled over 100 times when you were younger, so that is 30, 35 years ago. What is it like today? How would you describe it?
Let me put it this way. I bought my son an older Lexus when he turned 16. Well, actually 17. It's a white car, and it gets hot in there. And when I went to get the windows tinted, I was thinking of him specifically because I said, do not tint anything less than the law, because the last thing I need is for my son to be harassed like I was. So I still make decisions based on how I was treated, even with my kids today. Should that have to happen? Heck no. I mean, why should I fear about my son driving a car when I know my son's a great kid? Honor roll at NCHS. He's on his way to West Point. I mean, played bass in the school orchestra. Great kid. But me knowing how I was treated in this town, I made sure it wouldn't have to happen to him.
Does it happen to him?
No. That's one thing where I can honestly say, because I am mixed and my ex-wife was white, my son does not look very much like me as far as color of skin. So if he was walking right down the street, they would never think twice about it. I've thought about this statement that I made when my son was born. I was like, you know, my son will never have to face the issues I've had because of the color of his skin. And as a father, that says a lot. I mean, when you think about, because of the color of my son's skin, he won't be harassed. He won't be killed. He won't be called the N-word. He won't have to live through what I live through. And the only difference is he's a very light-skinned person. But remember, by the government standards, if you're 1/8 black, you're still black. Now that I just brought that up, I kind of teared up a little bit inside because that's pretty messed up.